8:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Hours 1 and 2 of the program are in the books. Download the podcast now. Apple, Google, Spotify. Hour 2, classic Halford and Bruff fashion. I think we covered 18 different topics in just under 60 minutes of content. We closed out with a debate about whether or not Darnell Nurse is going to be suspended. In case you missed it prior to going to break, Nurse is going to have a hearing with the NHL's Department of Player Safety for a spinning headbutt. That's how I'm officially classifying it now. A spinning headbutt on Philip Deneau last night in Edmonton's 5-4 overtime loss to the Los Angeles Kings. What it means? Nurse could be suspended as the Oilers face elimination in Game 6. We'll keep an eye on that. Hour 3 of the program just about to get underway. Trent Cull is going to join us in just a moment here. I need to tell you that hour 3 of this program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. To the phone lines we go. Very excited to have our next guest on the program. He is the coach of your AHL Abbotsford Canucks. It is Trent Cull here on the Halford & Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Trent. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. We wanted to start with the playoff series in Bakersfield. And, like, we don't mean to make light of a loss, but we kind of felt like hours after previewing the series was over. Like, I forgot how quickly the AHL playoffs and that opening round series can happen. We were all excited about the Abbotsford Canucks going into the playoffs, and then it was over really quickly. What happened over the course of those two games in Bakersfield for those that maybe didn't get a chance to digest the two games and the losses to the Condors in full?
Well, I guess it moves quick, to your point. I mean, that was the – unfortunately, we finished in Manitoba. We had to wait there and see what our fate was. We didn't win the last game. And then they ended up winning versus Stockton. So this is a Saturday night. We're sitting on a plane, you know, at 10, 11 o'clock. Waiting to see the results, and then they ended up winning their game. So they had to get on the plane, fly to California. We got in LAX. Sunday, we went back to the airport and picked up the five guys that just came back from Vancouver. And then from there, we drove to Bakersfield. We got in there on Sunday afternoon. We had a practice on Monday, and then we had a pregame skate, and then we played that evening. And we were slow starting, just to be honest with you. And I knew that was going to be some issues with our group. A lot of guys coming back from injury, and then, you know, having 5-6 guys come back from Vancouver, trying to get themselves back up and running the American Hockey League. And then we lost that game. We're up 1-0, 23 seconds left. And, you know, they scored a goal and ended up winning that game on a power play in overtime. And from there, we go to the next night. I liked our game better. I thought we were better throughout from the night before, but just wasn't enough. Ended up losing again by a goal. They scored a goal with just under 2 minutes left in the third period.
Ryan Johnson said afterwards that he tried to prep players, and I'm sure you did as well, that were new to the playoff experience of what the difference between the regular season and the playoffs were, and he said that he felt there were some players that didn't take in that information or rise to the occasion. I assume if he meant that they're new to the playoff experience, that they were younger players. Would you agree with that sentiment, and can this be a learning experience going forward?
Yeah, no, for sure it can be. And you know, I'm not going to sit here and name names, but it just wasn't younger guys either. I mean, we had guys that had games experience, and, you know, I mean, like, well, what I say about playoffs, too, it has no remorse, it has no conscience, it has no feeling. And, you know, that's where you have to be prepared, you have to be ready to go. And like I said to you before, I knew what our challenges were going to be a month ahead, because we had guys, like, going right back to the – we made playoffs, like Hoglander at the deadline ends up, you know, being out for a year. So we're actually a body less in the organization. So we knew we were going to be body short. There's always usually injuries that happen through that.
Trent, unfortunately, we're going to have to drop the line right now. It sounds as though we're having some technical difficulties here. Trent Cull, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks, the American Hockey League entity. Laddie is going to drop the call. He'll try and pick up on a better line. For those that missed it, he was in the midst of referencing some comments that Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, made, and you read them on the air. I'll reiterate them. Johnson said that he was unhappy at how abruptly the season ended. Quote, "I fully expected us to go in there and win the series, and I'm extremely disappointed we didn't. I tried to prep players that were new to the playoff experience of what the difference was between regular season hockey and playoff hockey, and I felt there were some players that didn't take in that information or rise to the occasion." So that's an interesting quote in and of itself. Trent Call was just in the midst of trying to address that. He obviously said, and we kind of assumed this, he wasn't going to name names and start individually listing who failed to rise to the occasion.
Trent, would you power rank the most disappointing players in the playoffs, please?
And go. No, here's the thing. When you talk about your prospect system, American Hockey League, farm team, whatever, there's that really interesting balance between going out and winning games and being competitive and trying to win just like at every other level, and then doing the prospect development thing at the same time. The good organizations manage to do both at the same time and have those goals in simpatico. The ones that don't, or the ones that maybe don't necessarily translate AHL success to the NHL level, it becomes a lot different balancing act, and it does become a balancing act at times. Anyway, Trent, do we have you back on the line now?
Yeah, you guys got me. Is this okay?
This is a little bit better. Just don't move.
Good.
The playoffs were disappointing, but overall, Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, said that he couldn't be happier with the job that you and the rest of the coaching staff have done. He said that since day one, your attention to detail, the support you've given the players, you've had them prepped for games and prepped for hopefully the NHL careers. All the challenges you faced this season, it must feel good to hear that from the management of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think we're always striving to get better. That's with our group, with our staff. This year, different challenges we had thrown at us too. I thought we responded really well. Our staff grew by exponentially, you know, just more guys around because of our travel and the situation. So more guys to handle, that's for sure. But you know what? It is nice. It's nice to hear that. I work closely with Ryan. He knows that there's no spur of the moment or off the hip kind of, you know what I mean? We're trying to do the right things for the players and trying to put them in the best situations for them to succeed. And I'm glad that he said that. You know, sometimes, I mean, on the flip side of things, you know, you go back into the Vancouver market and you know, you never know what you hear. And obviously there's a lot of people that may feel different. But it's nice to know that your boss sees the work that we're trying to do and every day and how we're grinding to try to get the most we can out of the players and of course move them on. So
what is the key to developing young players? Because I don't know the reason. Maybe it's not enough draft picks that have been delivered to the AHL team. Either there haven't been enough picks or some of those players have graduated directly to the NHL or they were the wrong picks. But the list of players that have gone from the AHL and spent some time there with the Canucks AHL team and then gone on to the NHL, it's pretty limited. And I know that a lot of Canucks fans just want that to change because they look at what the successful teams do, whether they're in Tampa Bay and they're in Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden, like, you see this new guy in the Pittsburgh lineup, and you're like, who is this guy? Or the Tampa Bay lineup, who is this guy? And you look then and see that that guy has spent a number of years in the AHL, and now he's contributing. So what is the key to doing that?
I think that there's got to be some patience too, right? I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, you know, like, I've been in that Tampa organization. I've worked there. Like, unless those guys are, you know, utter superstars too, I mean, everybody spends time in Syracuse, New York before they go to Tampa. So so that would be a bit of a difference right there. And just a great example would be someone like Adam Gaudette. Like, why wouldn't he have spent 2 years with us so we can groom him and get him better? And hopefully, and the goal is to get a more rounded finished product before he's out of his entry level contract to Vancouver, you know what I mean? As opposed to something that's maybe rushed and it's not as finished of a product. Because we all know in the NHL, even though I still believe development still needs to happen, that it's a results-driven league, and I understand that. So, but you know, sometimes we have to have a greater look. And I know from being inside those organizations, I was there, like that. We have to be patient. And that's one of the things that, I see with the new regime coming in, that, you know, it's about doing the right things. Like that's the first time in my 5 years that Pod Colson was sent down, as opposed to, you know, the last time we're in playoffs, Archibald couldn't go on waivers because they were afraid of losing him. So it's a different mindset, that's for sure. And I think that's the right one to have for us moving forward.
Was that the thinking with Jack Rathbone? Just wanting him to get him down there, get him playing games, and not to be like, as soon as the opportunity came to call him up, then you called him up?
Well, I think you got to have to talk to the general manager or the president. I mean, to find out their viewpoints. But I mean, I can only give you mine and my opinion. And I felt for Jack that he needs time. He needed time. Like, and you know, that's where I think you've heard me say this or someone else that I've done the study. I did the study on Jack 2 years ago, coming out of where it started in, I think it was prep school, and then, or even, I don't think it was high school, but then to where he went to college and then getting pros. Like, I did a comparable of him and Jet Wu, and the amount of games played from Jet going through major junior to say Jack through to his path to us. Like, he hadn't played hardly any games. And that's what we said. Like, the guy needs to get games. The same thing for any goalie, anybody who there's certain benchmarks where they need to have so many starts or so many games played to see what kind of product you have, right?
What is the plan going forward with Jet Wu? Because a lot of people were wondering why he was playing forward.
I'll play, like, it's not, it was out of necessity. We had, as you saw, there was quite a few players from the Abbotsford Canucks playing for the Vancouver Canucks, just like I referred to before. And we were trying to find someone with a little speed, a little bit of a forecheck attack. And that was, Jet was good enough to do it. We talked to him about it. He jumped in, and I thought he did a really good job. And I thought it was just more of a hope for the team to try to create some more of a, I mean, we're not a big, mean team, so to speak, you know what I mean? I'm not saying you have to be that way, but we needed to try to provide some kind of a forecheck. And then, and that was one of those things with the guys we had injured down there, Bailey at the time, Will Lockwood gets called up, just that necessity of trying to take away time and space. When Jet gets moving, he's a guy who can do that. And he provides some physical play. And so that was the thinking.
With regards to how much a guy should play in the American League, and you know, you alluded to your time with Tampa Bay, and there's a number of great examples of guys who played a lot of games. And I think it's important to note that, and I've talked to Ryan about this as well, just logging a lot of games as a professional is vitally important, because you get those reps and you get them in key situations and in playoff situations and stuff like that. You mentioned Gaudette as an example. If you had the ability to do it all over again, if the organization had to do it all over again, would they maybe say, you know, the grand total of 16 games that he played in the American League before going to the NHL just might not have been enough?
Well, if you're, again, asking me my opinion, I would say Absolutely. Like, you know, how can you replicate what we're talking about with Tampa if you're not doing what they do? You know, I mean, we can't have a guy who only play 16 games pro, and then he's going to play in the NHL, and then wonder why, you know, it's not maybe the right product for the group moving forward. You know, this is a kid who's a Hobey Baker winner. Like, you need time to acclimate to the National Hockey League, I think, or to that level, or to pro hockey. And there's some, like, you know, I'm not talking about Pedersen, who's the rookie of the year in the National Hockey League. I mean, you know, there's other players that need to spend some time in the American Hockey League so we can hopefully round out their game. And I think it's also a way of keeping your salary cap in check as well. But again, if you're asking me my opinion on that player, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, why wouldn't we have had him there longer to try to get a better product to the NHL, so he's more NHL ready when he arrives there?
Okay. This is really interesting, because one of the debates that we keep going back and forth about is that if a younger player thrives in the American League, some people would subscribe to the dangling carrot theory. If you do a really good job at one level, the dangling carrot is you get to go to another. What are the conversations like when a guy is doing really well at the AHL level and he wants to be in the NHL, and you have to tell him, we understand that you've ticked all the boxes here so far, but playing here is going to be better for you long-term, even if you can't see it right now?
Yeah, I think that's just, having the faith, and that's what we talk about, that there's usually always things to work on. There's always parts of your game that can be better. So, you know, that's the one thing, by being there, we can expose guys to different situations so they're more prepared, as opposed to sometimes in the AHL, you're going to have to be kind of penciled into a certain spot because that's what they need you to do for that moment or that stretch of time for them to win hockey games. So what we can do down here and provide that is to have guys play in all situations and work on those. Like, there's might be a guy who's not very good on the power play, but we're going to work with him to get that better, but is great on the PK or something, or for instance, those different things. So those are the things, the situations that we try to give a guy the more rounded approach to make sure that they're ready for that. And I think that's where, I don't think anybody's busting through the door and saying, like, I'm ready right now, I have to go. You know what I mean? Like, your time will come too, you know, and usually throughout the year, you get your chance. And when you do get your chance, you want to make sure that you're fully prepared for it.
We're speaking with Abbotsford Canucks head coach Trent Kull. Trent, what was the difference between playing in Abbotsford and playing in Utica?
Just for me, I think it was really good for our players to be on the West Coast in the sense of getting used to the grind of the NHL, Vancouver Canucks, and what they do for travel, traveling through time zones, planes, etc., days on the road, and, you know, and always trying to get something out of every one of those days. Great part is, just like we're talking about, if someone's hurt or unavailable after morning skate in Vancouver, we need a guy, we get him there, he can be there, he can be a player for that team that evening, and vice versa. There could be guys that are not in the lineup for Vancouver that they can get back, play for Abbotsford while we're at home as well. So, and also, kind of referred to this before in an interview last week, I think it's good for our players to be in the media market in Vancouver. I use the term an energetic fan base, which is great. And there's a lot of people, a lot of media around the hockey there. And it's a different environment. It's maybe one where, whether they're right or wrong, people are going to say things because they're trying to prosper their career. And whether that's very, correct or not. And our players have to deal with that. And, the young guys now, they're all social media connected. And it's a bit of a battle for them. And I've had talks with some of the guys, too, just about how much they're taking in. Because, you know, a guy can do well, or if he has a bad game, and all of a sudden could be the worst player in the world, right? So it's tough on them, too. So it's a good learning tool.
There are some real idiots in the media, I'm telling you, Trent. It's like, honestly.
You're talking to two of them.
Yeah, honestly. I've always wanted to talk to I like talking to young players, and I like talking to coaches and management about social media, because I just think it must be so tough to be a young person, even if you're a super confident athlete that's done well in life and is popular with teammates and popular with people. If you search your name on Twitter, then it's all of a sudden like this barrage of people ripping you. That's got to be really hard on you. And I think it's John Cooper in Tampa Bay. I think I read this somewhere that he said that, like, he, for the playoffs, he keeps all his players off of social media. I don't know how possible that is. I don't know if you can just lock up everyone's phones or whatever. I don't think it is. But I'm curious if you could expand a bit more on some of the chats you have with the young players about social media, about hearing their names in the media, because Vancouver is a tough hockey market.
You know what, for me, and it was a great learning experience for me as well, because there's so many, I guess you'd say, voices out there, and whether they're concrete or have the right opinion, but it is what I tell our players, that you realize that you're dealing with people that all they want to do, if they write something positive, it's not really worthy. But if they can do something as negative or as, I guess, to the edge as possible, that's what gets attention. And unfortunately, that's just a tough thing for a young guy to see. And I had it with me too. Like, I had my kids are texting me going, like, Dad, are you getting fired? Because you guys just ripped off three wins this weekend. And Jack Rathbone was, star of the week in the American Hockey League. And the guy's telling you, like, saying to everybody that you should get fired. And so, like,
Dad, why is Jet Wu a forward? Isn't he a defenseman?
Yeah, exactly. I get those questions from at home too. And you know what? And you've probably never seen that happen before when you guys were out there and we were in Utica. And sometimes it's a all hands on deck. And as opposed to maybe just, I'm going to tear off here on a tangent, but like, I didn't want to sit Jet Wu out either. Like, I wanted to play Jet Wu. We had some defensemen that were pretty decent in that, and they're where they were and their track record. Jet had got injured. We're like, we just get him up and running. Just like, that was the focus. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's what happens, and it's okay. Like, you broaden a guy's horizons, and all of a sudden he goes back on the blue line and he'll be fine. You know what I mean? Maybe he's better for it, you know? So anyways, going back to the social media, but yeah, there's a lot for guys to deal with and how to string through that. And what I say most of the time is you got to be strong, because there's going to be days where you're the superstar of the media, but there's going to be a lot more days where you're not. And that's where I say to them too, that overall, I don't see the need of it, because it just sends you down a rabbit hole that sometimes you don't want to be, and you're not going to like the end result. So stay the course, listen to the people that got you there, listen to the people that are around you. Those are the ones that are trying to help you and do the right by you, not necessarily someone who doesn't watch a game or someone who makes a bad comment and then 1,000 other people jump on it because they just want to jump on it as well.
Trent, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the offseason and some downtime. I'm sure we'll be doing this again soon as we get ramped up for next season.
All right, guys. Thank you, and I appreciate it. Good job today. Thank you.
Yeah, good job to you as well, and thanks for doing this. We appreciate it. That's Trent Cull, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You look like you want to say something.
No, it was just a good conversation with Trent Cull. I thought it was very interesting that he said that the Canucks rushed Adam Gaudette. That's his opinion. Now, he also said that the new regime, in talks with the new regime, it sounds like they're going to do things differently.
He also went on a tangent, and I respect that, because you and I often go on tangents.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And they preface it by saying, I'm going to go on a tangent.
That reminds me of a story I heard about Leeds United.
Now, here's the thing about gas prices. speaking of jumping off on a tangent, this is coming out of nowhere, but I'm excited to say it. And Jason, you're going to be excited to hear it. Today is McHappy Day.
Oh, yes.
And on McHappy Day, doing good is delicious. What do I mean by that? All day long, buying any food or beverage item will help sick children and their families stay together at Ronald McDonald Houses across Canada. All you have to do today, Jason, is go to McDonald's and buy whatever you love.
Done.
Big Mac, Egg McMuffin, fries. Has anyone put together a Big Mac and an Egg McMuffin yet? A big McMuffin?
Do you know what McDonald's has now?
No.
Waffle fries.
Yeah, I knew that.
What?
Yep.
Get out of here.
How are
really?
They? Have you tried them?
I haven't tried them yet.
McDonald's has waffle fries?
They're new, yeah.
Do they have wedge fries as well? I did not know that they...
Why are you waffle fries is enough. Why are you like, do they have wedge fries too?
What about yam fries?
Why stop there? Fries? No, that's a different product altogether. These are all potato variants.
Yam fries are very overrated, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent.
The other day, right before golf, I was very hungry because I didn't have very much to eat for breakfast. So I went to McDonald's because I'm in such good shape.
It wasn't McHappy Day, but he still went.
And I did the Big Mac meal with the large fries. And then I was so hungry that I was like, you know what? Add a cheeseburger on top of that.
Wow.
And guess what? I regretted it.
You don't say.
At about the seventh hole, I was like, didn't need that extra cheeseburger.
No doubt the anecdote McDonald's wanted when they put this read out there. Order McDelivery or visit a McDonald's restaurant today, which again is McHappy Day, not McRegret Day. How does McHappy Day support Ronald McDonald's?
McRegret.
All
it's
day.
It's a tough one.
All day. There's too many R's. All day, a portion of the proceeds from every food and beverage item sold will support Ronald McDonald House charities and local children charities across Canada. Go do it today. Be a good person. Get a Big Mac. Lots more to get to. Halford, Brough, Sportsnet, 650. Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. What's this little ditty?
called High Voltage.
Nice. This is something that I might have had back on my iPod. Jay and OK Falls writes in, as an early what we learned, Apple has discontinued making the famous, world famous iPod.
Oh, why?
That's not the real story here. The real story is that Jason Brough never owned an iPod. Never.
He had a Zune.
Never had one. Yeah.
A what?
That was the Microsoft answer.
The Zune?
Zune.
Oh, Zune.
You never
I never had one. I was an iPod guy.
This tells you about as well as the Zune did.
I had iPod
Mini. You didn't even know it existed.
Well, for a while, I was a PC guy and a BlackBerry guy, so I didn't want to add Apple in there because it seemed too confusing.
Fair enough.
I used an old Walkman. A Discman.
Yeah,
cassettes. It's skipping again.
Cassettes are making a comeback. You'll see. Jay wants to know what would have been at the top of the, I guess it's just Halford playlist in 2002. No One Knows by Queens of the Stone Age. Still holds up over time 20 years later. Still a terrific song. It's still on my playlist now. I still use the iPod Mini.
All right. It is What We Learn time on the Halford and Brough Show. Hopefully you've texted a few into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650.
I'm going to need to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Do it quickly.
I have to tell everyone that hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound by visiting campbell-pound.com today. Also, hour three of this program brought to you by the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dulari difference today by visiting your nearest Dulari Acura dealer today. Go.
Can I throw it a laddie for what we learn now?
Yes.
Do you have one?
I have one.
You do have one? Okay.
Do you want me to do it?
That's why I'm throwing it to you.
this was a big tease.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Big tease, okay. No payoff.
You guys know about the no-hitter yesterday, of course.
Yeah.
It was quite the game for the Angels.
Okay.
Would it end up 12-0 or so? It was quite the blowout.
I don't know. Didn't
Mike Trout hit a monster home run off a position player?
Well, yes. And Mike, you praised me yesterday for how I set up my what we learned.
Yes.
Now you're telling me to speed it up.
Yeah, hurry up.
Anthony Rendon, he's an Angel. He actually decided to go up against a position player who was on the mound and batted left-handed. He is a right-handed batter.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
He has never had a left-handed at bat in his career.
How'd he do?
Maybe he wants it. What is going on? Look at him.
Pretty.
Look at him doing this.
Pretty.
Come on, Yuri. Oh, my goodness. Left-handed Anthony Rendon with the two-run home run.
Homered.
What was the final? 12-0?
It was over 10. I saw it at 10-0. I think it ended up 12.
So Reed Detmers gets the no-no, second of the season. And now here's what I love about baseball is that with all these newfangled things like analytics and Moneyball, which is now two decades old.
Quote-unquote, things that work.
Using a calculator, using a computer. Two cool things last night. One, he actually was the only guy to pitch in a no-hitter. I don't count combined pitcher no-hitters.
It's a bigger surprise that we got a complete game.
You know how I consider liking something on Twitter the coward's retweet?
Mm-hmm.
Having multiple pitchers combined for a no-hitter is the coward's no-hitter. It's a joke. Anyway, the other cool thing, one thing I actually like about when the nerds took over baseball is now that we have leverage arms, we also have managers that are like, I'm not even going to waste a leverage arm in a blowout situation. We get more position pitchers or position players pitching than ever before. Baseball needs more of that.
It's fun.
They should have a mandatory inning in every game where you have to pitch a position player.
But then those position players won't be position players anymore. If they start regularly pitching, they'll be like, oh yeah, that guy's a pitcher.
You have to have another rule where they can't practice pitching.
Everyone
this is a lot of rules. I think
I'll be honest with you. I haven't thought this out.
I think I have. You just have to tell them. And they can't. Ideally, they get bonus points if they throw Ephus pitches.
Well, you run the risk of the Jose Canseco incident where he came in to do that and he blew out his elbow ligament.
Yeah, you know what that might have been a result of was all the steroids.
Yeah.
Maybe not the pitching, but the obsessive steroid use.
But this Rendon thing is fun. He goes up left-handed, never batted left-handed before. Can you imagine if the Canucks were up like 8-0 in a game and Pedersen just decided to go out wrong-handed and scored a goal?
That would be amazing.
We
need more of this, right? Like, baseball has gotten so analytical with everything designed to heighten the probabilities. I love it when all that gets thrown out the window and they're like, we're going to let the third baseman pitch for an inning. Like, that's great, right? No one plans for that.
I would like that Pettersson thing to happen just to log on to Twitter and be like, all right, let's see people fight about this.
I want to say Bobby Ryan did it because he picked up a stick.
He did.
He dropped his stick, picked up another one, but it was the wrong hand, and then he did score, actually, with the wrong
hand.
But
did he not play the same-handed way, just had a stick that was curved the wrong way?
I think
way,
it was completely the wrong way. Oh, okay. Maybe he did. Yeah, it was curved the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's
also, like, you could – I think a goalie should have to play at least 2 to 5 minutes with a player's stick instead of a goalie stick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be entertaining, right?
I honestly think I'd rather play with no stick.
You guys are going to create a real bush league.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. Good one. Nice job. Good setup, too. I apologize I rushed you. Moo cow.
I'm just going to do a quick what we learned here.
Okay.
Because I do want to get to the listeners.
I have to do one, by the way. You told me I had to do one.
Okay, you don't have to do it. All right. Okay. Stop talking then.
Okay.
The PGA Tour, in an unexpected development, has actually denied releases to the players looking to play in the first event of the Saudi Arabian financed LIV Golf Series. Now, the first event in the Saudi League is supposed to take place, or it will take place, in London, England, not London, Ontario. A lot of people get those confused. London, England, from June 9th to 11th, which happens to coincide with the Canadian Open. The PGA Tour has basically told guys like Sergio Garcia, who can't wait to be done with the PGA Tour, that actually you can't go. Now, this was unexpected for the London schedule because typically the PGA Tour has allowed players to go to overseas events. Now, things were expected to get interesting when the Saudi League came to the United States, and they've got a tournament down at Pumpkin Ridge in Oregon, which is a really cool course. I actually played there once. No bragging.
Are there pumpkins?
There are so many. It's made of pumpkins.
Neat.
Yeah, just all in a ridge.
Cool.
That's why they call it Pumpkin Ridge. Actually, I didn't see a single pumpkin there, which is funny.
The first story checked out, though.
So anyway, basically, this is a big battle that's going to be looming. And, well, it's already here. And we haven't, this news just broke yesterday, so we haven't had any reaction, like hard and fast reaction. Obviously, Greg Norman, who runs the Saudi League, has come out and said, well, our antitrust lawyers are on the case and they think we've got a pretty good case here. So I wonder if it will go into court at some point. Greg Norman has also said that, listen, guys, like, if you think we're going away, we're not going away. I've got like a $2 billion war chest here that we can use. So keep an eye on this. If you're into these sports and business stories, which I know at least 2% of you are, this is an interesting one because it's essentially you're arguing that golfers, like how much allegiance legally do they have to the PGA Tour? Because they're part of the tour, but they're also independent contractors.
Yes.
Right? So it's a bit of a gray area there. Obviously, if you're talking about the NHL and a guy's like, I want to go play a game in the KHL, you're like, you can't do that.
Read your contract.
But the PGA Tour is a little bit different, and I'm not actually sure the specifics that they have when they sign a contract to join the PGA Tour. But this thing is looming. It's got some very interesting personalities involved. Greg Norman, say what you will about him, he's not afraid to talk. So give us a moo cow on that.
Do you want me to do this one or do you want me to pass? It's up to you.
Do it really quickly.
Yesterday, and also breaking news, combining the worlds of sports and business and the video games, there is a divorce between Electronic Arts, which has its big campus in Burnaby, and FIFA. So I would say the most iconic sports game from the EA library is the FIFA game. It's been made for 30 years. It's been synonymous. EA, FIFA, FIFA, EA. Well, that's done. According to reports last October, the negotiations between EA and FIFA got messy. So what happened was EA wanted to expand their license with FIFA so they could do things like NFTs and other shams that are going to lose money. FIFA wanted to retain more control of its license so that it could do business with other companies that weren't EA. Yesterday, the two sides decided to divorce. So the iconic FIFA video game will the last will be FIFA 23. After that, it's going to be called EA Sports FC, sorry, which really rolls off the tongue. And then FIFA shot back by saying that we're going to continue to make the iconic FIFA game because we have the name FIFA. Now, EA swears that their game won't be changed at all because they still have the individual licenses with the respective leagues and things like UEFA. I guess we'll wait and see how this plays out. All I can say is I play this with my kid all the time. And the world that exists with FIFA Ultimate Team and Volta, and what are the other ones that they've got? Career pro clubs. There's this entire universe that exists,
yeah.
which it exists in real time because they're constantly doing updates to the game.
Mm-hmm.
So like they have teams of the week and teams of the season, and the player cards get more. It's an entire ecosystem that has been built at EA, and now there's this divorce. And
is this going to be a lesser product now?
I got two of my friends work at EA specifically on FIFA, and they said no. They said it's going to be the same game; it's just going to be under a different name. I think
could it even be better?
Maybe, but right now this is so new. The divorce; it's not like a real divorce where mom's like, "It's going to be better with me," and the dad's like, "On weekends it'll be better with me." And then you're like, "Okay, well, we'll
you
wait.
Want a pony? You got one?
Well, yeah, right."
But Dad, right. Where are we going to keep it? In my apartment.
Yeah, my dad's got.
What was the scoop Dom had that they can add diving now?
No, that was mine. I don't know, and that was I don't know how official that is. But anyway, those are the kind of things.
The game has been ruined because they added diving to it.
Yeah.
Just diving all over the map.
There's a dive button.
Another yellow card.
Just smash the dive button. Come on.
Every time you want to writhe on the ground in pain, hit left trigger. Anyway, it's an interesting business story for sure. And from the world of gaming, which again, as we try and glom onto the youths, I thought I'd throw my expertise in there. By which I mean I reached out to the one guy I know that works there. Moo Cow. Okay.
All right, let's head to the listeners now. Spencer in Campbell. I don't know if that's Campbell River. Spencer maybe is just lazy. Or he lives in a place called Campbell. What we learned, I miss Troy Stetcher. It has been interesting watching the Kings have that pairing of Stetcher and Edler for the last two games. Stetcher has scored in each of those games. And I was texting to a few buddies yesterday. I was like, what would you prefer, Edler and Stetcher or OEL and Myers for triple the price? And I decided not to put that on Twitter because I'm a good person and I don't want to see people fight. Instead, I've just said it on the radio. What we learned, Colin and Tawasin.
Radio that man.
What we learned, never put Halford in charge of any rules committees. Yeah, he doesn't think things through. But that's what we love about him.
I got a lot of good ideas.
For at least one inning. You think that in baseball,
mandatory position player,
a game with like a long tradition.
Yep.
You think that for one inning of every game, that position players should be mandated to pitch.
Now that we've incorporated the universal DH, we should also incorporate the universal CP, which stands for crappy pitcher. Am I wrong?
Yes.
I think I might be right.
Yes.
Surrey Ryan, what we learn, if the Leafs topple Tampa, the fan base will act like they've already won the cup. Surrey Ryan, listen, if the Leafs win this series against Tampa Bay, I think you can allow Leafs fans to celebrate.
Wee Willie Nylander!
As much as we make fun of the Leafs and their fans, and we talk about all the ridiculous attention that the Toronto Maple Leafs get, remember how you felt when Burrow scored in overtime against the Blackhawks. If the Leafs pull this off, this is how they're going to feel, the fans in Toronto. And the fans in Toronto, I'm not going to say they deserve happiness, but they've waited a long time. Now, here's the thing. If the Leafs blow this, remember how you felt when the Canucks were up 3-0 against the Blackhawks, and this was going to be the year. This was going to be the year for the Canucks. And you felt it slipping away, and you were going, oh, God, no. It's slipping away. The Canucks lose game 4, and then they lose game 5, and oh, my God, they lose game 6. And oh, my God, they blew the lead in game 7, and we're going to overtime. That's what's so exciting about playoff hockey. at the end of the day, it's just sports. But it doesn't feel like that. And I cannot wait until Thursday's game. And I cannot wait. And I really hope, I really, really, really hope that we get a game seven between the Leafs and Tampa Bay. Because even though the Canucks aren't in this, I do feel like I have an emotional involvement in this.
In other teams' failures.
In other teams' sadness and pain.
Particularly the Canadian ones.
Yes.
You're going to get game seven. Tampa Bay lost last game, so you know what that means for the next
game.
Oh,
yeah, they bounce back perfectly.
That's what they do. It's written in stone. It just happens. By the way, we're getting a bunch of texts in. I guess Dollywall has just tweeted out that the Canucks are one of the finalists for Russian free agent Andrei Kuzmenko. He's been added to the Canucks have been added to a short list of teams that he might consider signing for.
It's because Boudreau was on the call.
I heard about that.
Yep.
So I guess if you want to start connecting some dots, it means that Boudreau would theoretically be back next season, because why bring in a coach to talk to a player about what he's going to get to do next season if that coach isn't going to be in charge of that role?
Well, Dollywell also notes that the decision is a few weeks away, and I wonder if Kuzmenko might be just waiting to see how it plays out. If he is seriously considering Vancouver,
yeah,
you will want to know who your head coach is.
Have we had the conversation about whether he's bringing Triamkin with him, or are we done with that?
We're done with that.
Are we? I'm leery of all these because they're so scattered, the hits and misses from the KHL.
I think it's low risk. Here's the thing. As long as you don't gift this player a roster spot and be just like make all sorts of promises that you shouldn't keep, because if he comes to Vancouver, he comes to the NHL, and he's like not very good,
yeah,
or he's not a fit for the league, you need to have the freedom to be like, all right, you're out of here, you're not playing for this team.
You remember when Vegas signed Vadim Shipachev? Remember that? It was a big ballyhoo.
That's what I'm talking about.
Big
right?
ballyhooed move, and then within four games, they're like, this was a mistake.
And he scored.
Yeah, I know. But then they watched him play a little bit.
It was like Fabian Brunstrom all
yeah,
over again.
Yeah, there's another one.
Well, the Canucks comparison would be Krutov back in the day. I was so excited for Krutov and Larionov as well. But actually, it was funny because I think I was more excited for Krutov because he was like the goal scorer.
I'm he like, liked this, Big Macs.
How many people
he
were
sure
worried?
He sure loved McDonald's.
How many people were worried? Because I wasn't in Vancouver at the time. How many people were worried Bure would turn into something like that when he came over?
Was there
any doubt?
I think that was different. He was just younger. I think he was more of a wild card.
He wasn't an established player.
But they watched him play for 5 minutes, and they're like, oh, he's the fastest person on the planet. You watch Krutov play, and you're like, ooh, he looks bigger than we remember.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually tried to answer that question, and then I should have just said, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the expectations for Pavel Bure were. But I think it was a different time back then. Like, you didn't have as many clips as them playing junior or whatever.
Especially a guy from Russia who was sort of under the radar.
Yeah.
I knew there was expectation for him. I was just wondering if there was any doubt amongst Canucks fans that he would be a bust.
Or
if it was just straight electricity.
Yeah, honestly, I can't remember. It was so different then. It was just like there wasn't as much buildup back then for the arrival of these players. It was kind of like, oh yeah, Burry's here today. Like, really? That's cool. He's good.
What we learned from Soapy. Soapy on the island. Hashtag WWO, what we learned. I'm no mathematician, says Soapy, but Tom Brady will be getting paid close to $2 million a game for Fox as an analyst after he retires. Can he ever catch a break? Did you see the list of broadcasters, the highest paid sports broadcasters annually?
Where's Nance on it?
He's up there with Brady and them. Jim Rome.
Yeah.
The venerable Jim Rome. It made me
he probably got like one of those big deals, right?
Yeah. And they syndicate his show on the TV. We need to work to that. Right now we are
not going to make it.
We are being you're live streaming us, right? Or did we stop that already? What happened?
Still in working in production.
I thought we were putting it up on Twitter so people could watch.
It was a test.
Oh, okay. We had like
it failed.
It turns out
that video of us does not sell.
Something about your faces.
Didn't we have like 12 or 13 viewers? How do we monetize this? Jim Rome's making $30 million a year. I'm still out here drinking recycled coffee. Come on.
What we learned, unsigned, Shaq made almost 12,000 baskets in his career and only made 1 3-pointer. I'm surprised he made one. I remember Shaq at the free throw line, and it looked Like, I'm not even blaming Shaq for it because it looked so hard. It looked like you're at the free throw line, like you or I, or especially me, with a tennis ball.
Yeah,
right? And you're just like,
his hands were too big.
It's too small.
Yeah. And he was too high up in the air. He's too tall.
Yeah.
The
like throwing it down.
Right. Yeah, the angles weren't right. It was like a normal person trying to shoot a golf ball.
Yeah. I said tennis ball.
Yeah.
You went even smaller.
Yeah. It's not Shaq's fault. I didn't know he only hit 1-3, though. That's new.
Juan texts in, what I learned, we will finally be able to see Canada at BC Place against powerhouse Curaçao. Sorry if you guys have talked about it already. I, like Mike, also slept in. We did mention it.
Yep. Curaçao, a country and a liqueur.
So I wonder how many people are going to show up to BC Place as kind of a celebration, just to, I'm not saying see them off to the World Cup, because this isn't going to happen. It's going to happen in June, and I think it's June. Do we have the exact date on that, in case people want to get tickets?
Yeah. I don't have it in front of me. Give me a second.
Just find it. I wonder how many people are going to show up just as kind of like a celebration, because Vancouver didn't get any of these qualifying games.
June 9th,
Curaçao, Canada, BC Place, be there. The Superdogs will also be there. I don't know if the Superdogs will be there.
Cool if they brought the Superdogs.
I can't sit here and say that I've got a huge desire to go. Maybe if Alphonso Davies is there, it would be cool to watch him play. I wonder what kind of lineup they're going to have out there against Curaçao in BC Place. I was hoping for something bigger because there had been talk about some pretty big name countries coming to BC Place. I don't know if that talk is still out there, if the hope is still alive. Curaçao to me, like, meh.
You're not alone in that assessment, friend.
Yeah, I just wonder how many people are going to show up.
Oh, they'll sell. I would put the over.
Over under. We'll bet you $1,000 on it.
I'd say 20,000.
Yeah.
Which is a good crowd.
Sure.
Hashtag WWL, what we learned. Unsigned, so it must be from Gary. I learned that they stopped the live stream because Halford was too fat. Actually, this camera angle in the studio is one of the more flattering ones.
We really? Stopped it because you're
Well, look at it. I think we look all right with this one. We got the ring light and we got a good camera angle. I did a video. I don't know why I agreed to do this, but they're like, can you do a quick five to 10 second video of yourself asking what series wants to go in to round one? And I summoned all my dad energy to put the camera like right next. My head was like, just gigantic. And I did like a close-up of my own head.
You could see the beads of sweat.
And then I sent it off and they put it in and I'm like, what have I done? I've made my head and face look bigger than they are somehow. It was amazing. But I like the setup in here. We should live stream this stuff.
All right, what's happening tonight? Flames are in action against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, Pittsburgh could eliminate the New York Rangers tonight. Washington and Florida, that series is tied at 2. Big pivotal game 5 there. Same with Calgary and Dallas. Don't forget NBA playoffs. 2 very good series. Milwaukee and Boston, that one's all tied up. The Warriors could advance back to another Western Conference final with a win over the Grizzlies tonight. We got to get out of here for today, but we will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Brough. He has been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.